Chicago Sports Conversation is now.
Today, WGN Radio and the Chicago White Sox are jointly announcing a multi-year agreement.
The Beat.
King, White Sox with two, moves it in, fires, Gibson down with a butterfly save, and time runs off the clock. It was a valiant effort by the Blackhawks.
You never succeed in this business until you've had the experience of working with a terrible hangover.
On 720 WGN.
It is always good to hear the voice of Harry Carey. Good afternoon. The Beat is on the air. Special edition, our first ever White Sox Weekly. That comes up at 4 o'clock. We will start with what just happened out at Allstate Arena. Good afternoon, Harry Tynowitz. How are you?
I am wonderful. It's great to be here with you, Mark Kerman, as we look out from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, and there is snow a-falling.
Yeah, getting closer and closer to the big move over here, but still sitting here checking out the scene, and looks like it's going to be a great day to ski out there, Harry. Great day for skiing, fresh snow, get on out there, a little Wilmot Mountain, something along those lines. Come on, I know you're a big, you're a very athletic guy.
Right, well, you know me, I've been spending the last few days just snowboarding.
Right, I was very impressed with your trip. You were motivated by the Olympics,
mm-hmm.
and you've been doing the triple axel, double toe, spinorama situational.
I do the triple axel Foley, where I make like two really good Beverly Hills Cop movies, and then the third one just sucks.
I really love Axel Foley. Mumford College? Was it Mumford College, the t-shirt?
I think it was Mumford College. Axel Foley, man. I'll tell you something. Eddie Murphy, Beverly Hills Cop and 48 Hours. Two of just like the funniest movies you can sit there and watch. And I show them to my son, and they translate years later.
There you go. I watched Beverly Hills Cop with Papa Fred, who's now 92, who's going to call Phil Tynowitz any day now.
Yeah. There's another Tynowitz waiting on a phone call.
That was the conversation at dinner last night. My dad's like, I have to call Phil Tynowitz. I'm like, well, Dad, you don't really have to.
They went
call
to high school together like 75 years ago.
Your dad and my dad went to high school together, and now we're doing radio together. Isn't that adorable?
It's very bizarre.
All right, so here, let me just say this about Northwestern, and I'm saying this as I'm wearing the purple shoes,
mm-hmm.
and a beautiful Northwestern windbreaker.
Gorgeous.
Yes, and one of the great moments that I've had the pleasure to experience in sports last year with the Wildcats beating Michigan, Derek Pardon
so
at the
great
buzzer. You were there. And then the NCAA tournament selection show, which was incredible.
Fantastic.
It was so awesome. Beating Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Amazing. And a tremendous game against Gonzaga.
Should have been Gonzaga. Guy's hands were through the rim.
Guy put his hands through the rim.
Guy's hands were through the rim.
Would have been a 3-point game. Northwestern had all the momentum. Didn't work out, but a phenomenal season. And obviously this season has gone not the way the Wildcats wanted it, and an extremely rough week, losing a game that you had at Rutgers and blowing a 22-point halftime lead, 27-point overall to Michigan State today. All of that is extremely disappointing.
Without one of your two best players to be up 27 points on the best team in the conference, the second-best team in the country, Sparty sits at number two. And I don't know what happened in the second half. They just stopped scoring.
Yeah, they could not hit a shot. And Michigan State did step up their defense, and the Wildcats were playing short.
And State had their two best players on the bench for the rally.
Right. But there's a reason that Michigan State's number two. I just want to put this on the map for Northwestern fans out there. I think for next, and I know we don't want to bury this season quite yet, and I would,
because the tournaments are coming.
Anything can happen in the Big Ten tournament, and they played Michigan State incredibly tough today, and that's the best team in the conference, arguably. I mean, right now they certainly are. So you never know what happens, and they play without McIntosh today. So let's not completely end the season. However, just looking forward, the new arena is going to be incredible. And Northwestern, just for a reminder, has their best ever recruiting class coming in
next
year.
Best ever.
At one time, it was ranked as high as 7th in the country, and now like some of the classes have come in, and so it's dropped into somewhere between 11 to 20. Regardless, it's an incredible class. And one of the guys is Pete Nance, who is Larry Nance Jr., now of your Cleveland Cavaliers. His dad, of course, Larry Nance, Bulls fans from
right. The
Michael Jordan
era. Suns.
You remember, well, Larry Nance was a dunk champion. He was a great Cleveland Cavalier on the Mark Price, Ron Harper teams. And he's He's never been a dad that has been like pumping his kids out there and the whole
AAU. Like Mr. Ball?
Right. He's the opposite of LeVar Ball, exactly. So when Larry Nance Jr., then with the Lakers, was in town, I went up to him and I asked him, so how's the how's that new Wildcat going to be in Pete Nance? And he's like, look, that's my younger brother, and I don't want to give my younger brother too much credit, but that kid is going to be incredible. He is better than me. Now, this is a guy that's in the NBA who the Cleveland Cavaliers wanted desperately.
Key figure.
In the Jordan Clarkson deal, Isaiah Thomas going out. This is a bona fide NBA player saying that a kid that's going to Northwestern as a freshman who's 6'8", 180 pounds as a point guard slash wing is better than me and that he's going to be playing in the league. Now, Northwestern hasn't had, I mean, the first guy to play in the NBA in forever since Evan Eschmeyer is Reggie Hearn, who was a great walk-on at Northwestern and just ended up on the end of the Pistons bench and hit a three in his first shot. Northwestern does not have a whole long list of NBA players. This guy's saying that Pete Nance is going to be better than him who's in the league. That's a huge compliment.
So your message today for the Wildcat faithful is do not hang your head low because of this offseason, because of the 27-point lead that the Cats let slip through their fingers today. Look ahead to the gorgeous new state-of-the-art stadium that's coming to Evanston and to Pete Nance.
Yeah, and to Miller Kopp, who was recruited by Butler and Georgetown and Texas A&M and Vanderbilt and is 6'6" and can shoot it, can pull up. And if you talk to people around Northwestern, some of them think that Miller Kopp is a better player than Pete Nance. So if he's better than Pete Nance, that's a hell of a class. Plus, you have a point guard who was the highest rated recruit when they got him before Nance and Kopp in Jordan Lathan, who's going to take over, you would think, running the show next season as well. So that's three guys. And then they have Ryan Young, who's a 6'10" big man from Pennsylvania, who's more of a get-on-the-glass, gritty, grimy type of big guy. He's not wowing anybody with his rankings, but you know, so you need guys like that. So there is a huge, talented, tremendous class coming in that's going to, hopefully, I would think, playing very exciting basketball in Evanston. New arena this year, for lack of a better word, has been rough. I can think of other words. But I'm super excited for the future for the Wildcats.
And I'm excited for the Wildcat football season.
That too.
Because you got the Fighting Irish coming in, you got Big Red coming in, you got the other team from Michigan coming in, and of course Adam Hogue brings his Wisconsin Badgers.
Yeah, the best home schedule arguably in all of college football. Now they like to see what, hopefully Clayton Thorson will have a tremendous recovery this year. Be great to have him there quarterbacking the Wildcats, and there will be no Justin Jackson, but that's okay.
As long as that guy is sitting on the chair on Mustard's Last Stand, I'll be happy. What is that guy's name? Do you know his name? Guy who's been there for 62 years, sitting on the same stool by the ice cream at the end of Mustard's?
I know who you're talking about. My favorite Mustard's employee ever was Keith, who RIP is no longer with us.
I'm sorry to hear.
Keith was a great, great man and a diehard Northwestern fan. Listen, Mustard's is a must stop, pregame, postgame, during game, whatever you whatever you need. So Just a moment of Northwestern. And I also want to throw out there.
Yes.
They're not playing today, Harry.
Yeah, UIC Flames.
No, not going with UIC. Would you like to guess?
They're having a very good season.
You know who's also having an outstanding season? Who, there was a tremendous piece in the Chicago Tribune today about they're one of their 90-year-old inspirational nuns, the Loyola University Ramblers at 22-5.
Yeah, the team that went into Gainesville and knocked off the Gators.
Yes, just beat Valpo, and Loyola's right now sitting on a solid, solid four-game winning streak. They lost to Bradley by two. Before that, they were on a run that dated all the way back to non-conference season. This is a Rambler team that I think we're going to have a team in the NCAA tournament. So I think that's worth noting in the state.
Well, yeah, that's good. There used to be a time when I was younger, we had multiple teams in the tournament, and the Orange team, the state school, used to go every year. But you know, that was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Yeah, Loyola's fun. It's easy to, and I always cheer for Loyola in high school because of the football coach being the best football coach in the country. But I'm very happy to cheer for the college Loyola Ramblers. And the win at Florida was just spectacular.
Yeah, and we were fortunate enough to we had Porter on. Porter Moser, the head coach over there, who's a guy, easy guy to root for, right?
Yeah, he is a guy to root for.
And my one knock on Loyola, if I may, Carmen's Pizzeria used to be right across the street.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I sort of thought that
even though the name is spelled
with an E and not an A, but right. I just felt very.
I thought DeFalco owned it.
Yeah, I think he. Well, and his father.
Yeah, Lou. Lou's birthday is coming up.
Is Lou's birthday coming up?
Oh yeah, Feb 25.
Does Lou still listen to the show?
Lou does.
The Midwestern University Multi-Specialty Clinic in Downers Grove offers a comprehensive patient-centered healthcare experience at their dental institute, family medicine clinic, speech language institute, physical therapy institute, and eye institute. At the clinics, you'll receive exceptional care from a team of highly qualified faculty and students. Learn more at mwuclinics.com or call 630-743-4500. That's 630-743-4500. The Midwestern University Clinic, your family's home for health care. Harry, it was 1992. Then Comiskey Park was entering its second season. I was a 19-year-old in college, getting ready to go to the University of Iowa, transferring from the University of Hartford, looking for a summer job, and I was able to don the red, white, and blue sports service uniform.
Yeah.
Lace it up, strap it on, sell Dove bars, cotton candy. I picked any item that was light and didn't have a change factor.
So you wanted something like you.
Right. That's exactly right. Light and no change. I don't exactly know how that translates to me, but I think somehow it does. I get it. I was very like at that point I was like 156 pounds, barely right. 1992, Harry, scaling the upper deck, wearing the White Sox hat, Dove bars. I think I might have sold you one day against the Oakland A's.
One, please. I got to go to the first game ever at the what do we call it now? The
Guaranteed Rate Field.
Yeah, it was. I think the Tigers got like 82 runs that day. It was horrible. I think Cecil Fielder hit a bomb. But you know, I went with my dad. You know, my dad's a diehard Sox fan, and my mom grew up right by Wrigley Field, so we've always loved both teams. And you know, I'm a little older than you know, a lot of the kids around here at the station. They're like, you can't like both teams. You're a loser. But I tell everybody, I'm bisexual.
Yeah, Steve Cochran was on at halftime today, and he's talked about how he's always been a fan of both teams in town. And then many have. You've always been bisexual.
I own in my closet right now are 8 Cubs jerseys. There used to be 9, but my wife threw one out.
What'd she throw out?
She threw out the oldest jersey. I have over 100 jerseys. They mean so much to me, and not as much as my kids, of course. But she threw out the first jersey I ever owned. She threw out the jersey I had the longest. She threw out my Ray Burris 1976 Cubs road jersey.
Why did she throw it out?
Because she was mad. She threw it out because she said it had mildew on it. It's a grass stain that has been on that jersey since 1976. But I still have 8 Cubs jerseys, but I have 10 White Sox jerseys, including a Kelly 1 Charlotte Knights jersey.
That's incredibly cool.
Yeah.
I was out earlier in the week, went and saw Jim Thome, who was going into the Hall of Fame.
Yes, he is.
612 home runs.
More than you.
A little bit more than me. Yes. And just the most likable guy ever, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons to like the White Sox. And I just think, you know, WGN and baseball, that's a fit, you know.
Yeah, that might have been something that's happened over time. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so we're all thrilled to have the White Sox here. We'll be doing White Sox Weekly coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. Don Cooper, the outstanding pitching coach of the White Sox, will be with us right after the 4 o'clock news. Quick timeout, get you into that news, and get you into White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox!
That ball hit deep!
It's time for White Sox Weekly. On your home for Chicago White Sox baseball, 720 WGN.
Look at Dan Long just making White Sox Weekly opens out of nowhere. Good job, Dan. I'm proud of you. Dan Long producing the program. I'm Mark Harmon. You are Harry Tynowitz. We are efforting Don Cooper. Hey, White Sox fans, it's never too early to lock in a 2018 ticket package. Full and partial ticket plans are available, including a lower-level 10-game plan that starts at only $230. Take advantage of great benefits like discounted pricing and a flexible payment plan as well. For more information, call 312-674-1000 or visit whitesox.com. Best value in the city, White Sox baseball, Harry.
Pretty exciting. Pretty exciting. The White Sox are coming here, and I, you know, obviously their record this year is not going to be that good. You know, there are guys that are coming in and saying, hey, we can compete. No reason we can't compete. But I wouldn't expect the Sox to be, you know, battling for a playoff spot anytime soon. However, what Rick Hahn has done here, he has taken the 29th rated minor league roster and put him amongst the top two or three. And that is a great reason for Sox fans to be excited.
And look, there's no reason to take any chips off the table on February the whatever it is, 17th. You know, who knows how the season will go? Who knows if anything more is coming in free agency? I would highly doubt that there's any major moves for the White Sox. But look, if they perform to, let's say Yoan Moncada has a phenomenal year. Let's say Lucas Giolito actually steps up and looks like the pitcher that the White Sox believe he'll be. It could be more interesting than not. And you look at the AL Central right now. I mean, I don't see. Are you terrified of the Cleveland Indians? Are you terrified of them?
The Cleveland Indians are damn good.
Pretty good.
They're damn good.
Well, they haven't had their offseason has been less than overwhelming. Can we say that?
You can say that about a lot of teams. There's still so many talented free agents. They've got that camp going on now in Bradenton, and I was going to ask Darren Jackson about that when he visits with us later.
Right.
There's a free agent camp going on. I assume most baseball people are aware of this. It's going on in Bradenton, Florida, and there's a bunch of guys there that normally would have been signed months ago, but for whatever reason, they didn't sign, and people feel like now that the Cubs signed Yu Darvish, all these other guys will start to fall. It hasn't happened
yet.
We'll see what happens. But there are some. J.D. Martinez was great last year. He's the best bat available.
Yep.
And J.D. Martinez, for some reason, has not been signed yet.
Well, and a lot of people are talking about baseball 2018 offseason as, is this collusion? Are the owners getting together and doing something to the players? Here's a little memo for everybody. The owners are not smart enough to all get in a room and collude over the players that are out there. The owners are actually trying to beat each other. Jerry Reinsdorf is trying to beat Tom Ricketts. Jerry Reinsdorf is trying.
Right, but if you don't think the owners are smart, they're all billionaires.
Well, of course they're great businessmen.
Do you believe that there's collusion involving Colin Kaepernick in the NFL?
Absolutely not. No. I think that every individual team made the same decision. Colin Kaepernick is the 25th to 33rd best quarterback in the world. He's not Joe Montana in his prime. He absolutely belonged on a roster. I find it offensive.
You championed that.
Yeah, it's disgusting that he wasn't, but I think they all made the same decision. You are going to cause a huge distraction, and we're going to have to answer a lot of questions, and perhaps we'll lose sponsors. I would argue that there are more things important in life than sponsors, but it was deemed that he was not worth whatever he was going to bring off the field. So I think they all individually made the same decision. Same thing that's going on in baseball right now. Look, I'm not giving you a 10-year, $30 million a year contract. It does not play well. The baseball is being run by different people. The old school is going out the door. You got everybody sort of thinking the same way. And this particular free agent class is not that appealing. It's okay, but there's no Bryce Harper. Nobody's willing to overpay.
Next year's is going to be spectacular.
That's another factor.
So, I mean, I think that's one of the things that we got to, you know, point out right away is that the guys that will be up next year are worth sinking your teeth into. So it could be, you know, the teams are like planning ahead.
And there's a lot of teams like the White Sox who have loaded up on young talent, and it just doesn't fit on their timeline to go out and spend a ton of dough.
Right. More than half the teams are probably going into the season thinking, hey, we can compete next year.
Right. Right. So I think that all factors in. I mean, the White Sox did go. I, I, If they had made some major splash, like let's say they came out tomorrow, the White Sox have signed J.D. Martinez, or the White Sox have signed Jake Arrieta, I'd be like,
They took a run at Manny Machado. They kicked the tires on him.
Kicked the tires, but I don't think that was ever super serious. I mean, I think you all, when a player like that's available, you, of course, want to see what it's going to cost, what it's worth, all that type of stuff.
They have Wellington Castillo behind the plate.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago fans, no matter what side of town you're on, you know Wellington Castillo. I think Wellington Castillo is a solid guy to have guiding this young pitching staff with Don Cooper, so that there's reason to be excited. You know, Tim Anderson at short, you know, when he got glasses, he said he saw the ball, you know, in an entirely different way. I mean, it seems kind of crazy to me, like, because I've had glasses since first grade, and like, how do you not have glasses? Or, you know, I think that there's potential right now on the Sox before you even get to the guys that will be coming up from the minors. Tim Anderson could be such a better player this season than he has been.
Well, and it reminds me, the White Sox right now remind me of the Kansas City Royals of the, say, 2010, 2011.
Didn't you used to do a show out in Kansas City?
So that's the point. Like, I was doing Kansas City, the Royals were on the station that I worked on down there. I was in the locker room for every single game doing some Royals pre- and post-game stuff, right? And so you just saw it coming, and they were, the Sox won 67 games last year. This year, most people are projecting them to be in the 70s, but when you're seeing young talent on the field every night, and you're seeing it coming, and you see wins that comeback type of wins and performances, to me, that's an exciting season, even if you don't, you know, win 90 games, because you just know, watching the team, like, it is coming, and it's coming quicker. So maybe they'll be a 500, maybe they'll be in the 70s, and maybe they'll stun each other, but there's just a lot to watch. You're past the point of watching players on the field that are not going to be there for the long term.
And Sox fans, they don't have to go back 2 years. Go back last year. The Astros are the blueprint. You know, the Cubs did it, and then the Astros did it, and that's what the Sox are doing right now. And I think that, you know, 100% of the fan base is on board, and Reinsdorf needs to be commended. Ooh. Because, you know, Jerry's got to be in his 60s by now. And Jerry said, you go ahead and rebuild. If that's the best thing for our franchise, I'll wait. I'll be patient. You go ahead and rebuild.
312-981-7200. This is 720 WGN, our first ever White Sox Weekly. Adam Hoag's on the street doing something, so now you're going to have to come in and say hello. Sorry, you want to talk outside? Let's talk outside. Hang on a second there, buddy. What's up there, Adam?
Am I really witnessing Mark Carmen wearing a White Sox hat?
That's right, buddy.
Showcase studio?
That's exactly right. First ever hat professionally that I ever wore, 1992 Chicago White Sox, and proud to wear it today, pal.
Harry, your thoughts?
My thought is you don't want to see what he's wearing below his waist.
Adam Hoag, for the record, is donning a Minnesota North Star ski cap, which is a sweet look. What are you doing right now?
It's an awesome cap.
Family next door, we're hanging out.
You just have family next door at Howells & Hood having a little...
Yeah. Went to the SNL experience. So, you know, just a nice little Saturday.
It's beautiful out there.
Yeah. Well, it was. Now I'm getting snowed on.
So,
Is your dad betting horses today?
He is, if you tell him who to bet on.
Are you? Would you like to give your emotions right now, standing there with the snow coming down on the first ever White Sox Weekly on 720 WGN?
I am ready for the snow to go away, for the sun to come out, and for it to be opening day.
It's coming, baby. It's coming soon. You look good, for
Thank
the record.
You,
I heard the sun will come out tomorrow.
Yeah.
I hope so.
All right, we're gonna talk to Don Cooper. By the way, Sports Central 1 to 2 every Monday through Friday. Adam Hoag is there for you.
Adam Hoag and Wendy Snyder.
WGNRadio.com. Wendy does do 1 to 101, and then and then Adam's got 101 to the rest of it. Thank you.
It's gonna be a fun summer.
Anything you want to promote for Monday? Do you know? Too far ahead of the game.
A little bit of All-Star coverage for the NBA.
Huge.
Yeah,
huge.
Not really much lined up yet. Not gonna lie.
That's okay.
What time is Bo Ryan coming on Monday?
1:35.
Excellent.
1:35. Bo Ryan, perhaps. All right, Adam, you're the man.
Thanks.
Adam, on the street.
That cap is awesome.
That is a sweet look. 312-981-7200. Let's get Dave in here as we continue on with our White Sox Weekly. He wants to talk free agent prices from Hoag to Dave. That's what we do. What's up, Dave?
How you doing? Hey, I agree with you 100%. I mean, it's a new era. Look at all the free agents just sitting there. Okay, Daytona 500 is tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And Relevance. Look at it. Kurt Busch had to sign a contract that he didn't like. It sat on his desk for 3 months.
He did?
Not enough money, yes. He had to go with another team and get paid less money. Kenseth does not have a ride. He's sitting on the sideline because he wants to go to a quality team and nobody wants to sign him.
There'll be Matt Kenseth, Mark.
Coming up.
Dave, are you strategizing getting more NASCAR talk on the air by calling in with baseball free agent prices? Are you really, what you want to say is that you want to hear more NASCAR?
No, I want to hear both because I love the fact that young kids are coming up and these older guys that want $80 million aren't getting it.
Fair enough. All right, Dave. Appreciate you.
Dave, appreciate the
500 is tomorrow, you know?
Hey. Absolutely.
Dave?
Yeah.
I'm not really a race car guy. Like, I'm a big speed racer fan.
I'm
in the
Googling,
Mach 5.
I'm Googling right now. Daytona 500.
Is the Daytona 500 is considered the greatest race in all of auto racing, why do they start the season with it? Shouldn't it be at the end, like the Super Bowl or the World Series?
But isn't it cool that it's the Super Bowl of racing? It's the first race of the year.
But shouldn't you have to, like, qualify for it?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You got to qualify for every race.
Hey, Dave.
Then, you still got the Indianapolis race. You still got Darlington. You got all these great races.
Dave, we love you. Yeah. I want to give you Lou Malnati's, yeah, but you have to tell me who drives the Chevy number 88 car. If you're really a NASCAR guy, you'll know
that's
that.
That's an easy one.
He just retired, so I don't know.
Okay, well, it'll be Alex Bowman in the Daytona 500, but I still believe your knowledge here, Dave. Don't worry. You're all good.
Wait. He's got a.
What's that?
What number was Racer X?
Thanks, Dave.
I know about the young kids coming up, getting a chance.
There you go. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate you. Hey, let's take a quick time out here. Don Cooper coming up. We'll take your calls too. White Sox Weekly 312-981-7200, 720 WGN. And a reminder, team, you can join us in Glendale, Arizona for White Sox spring training, single game tickets for the 2018 Cactus League season at Camelback Ranch. They're on sale now. They start at just $10. You can purchase tickets online. Visit whitesox.com/spring or camelbackranchbaseball.com. You can also call if you want to be old school, 1-800-352-0212.
Camelback is gorgeous. It is a spectacular facility that the White Sox have there, and they share it with some team from California. I can't remember their name.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
But you know what? Why wait till April to watch White Sox baseball? Grab a plane, go out there. There's a ton of Chicagoans out there now in Arizona.
Right, and our first broadcast for the Sox is coming up
Friday,
the 23rd. Yes, a week from yesterday. So spring training baseball, you will hear it on the air. The White Sox and the L.A. Dodgers next Friday, 2:00, 2:05 to be exact. 312-981-7200. Darren Jackson will be with us right after 4:30. Let's get Mike in here. Mike, what's up, man? Welcome to 720 WGN.
Hey, Carm. Hey, Harry. Listen, Carm, I've talked to you in the past. I'm a huge fan.
Mm-hmm.
But here's my deal, and I'm so excited about diehard White Sox fan here, and I'm glad that they're on an awesome radio station. And I'm just, ironically, I was calling to see how is it that everybody with the DNA of the Cubs, it seems like you guys are obviously DNA in because of the Cubs' history with you guys. How is it you guys are going to really, in your heart of hearts, going to cheer for my White Sox?
That's a great question, Mike. And Harry, you want to handle it first, and then I'll go?
Well, I mean, I've been going to Sox games since I was a kid. I'm a product of a mixed marriage. My dad's a diehard Sox fan. My mom grew up four blocks from Wrigley Field. So I've always loved both teams, and I was 30-something when they started playing for real. So, you know, I'm bisexual. I got a ton of great White Sox memories, and I go back to the days of, you know, Melty and Richie Allen and Buddy Bradford and Pat Kelly and Ed Herman and Wilbur Wood. And I remember, it's fun to watch the Sox. And look, WGN and Major League Baseball, that's a marriage that makes sense. So the Sox should be here.
And Mike, look, when the White Sox win the World Series, hopefully in 2020 or 2021 or 2019 or whatever it's going to
or
be.
Or all of them.
Yeah, right, there you go. You can be out front as a longtime White Sox diehard from the beginning.
Here's my only thing I'm afraid of.
Okay, go ahead.
And obviously, you know, superstitious and all that stuff. Even the Cubs never won anything until they left your radio.
You think it was the radio station, Mike?
That's what scares me, man.
Okay. Okay, well, first of all, Mike, you've already seen a World Series, so you don't have to scale that mountain. Second of all, I don't believe that it was the radio station. It might have been some other factors that was going on. And third of all, just for the record, Mike, since working in media, I was on the field in 2008 for the blackout game. I interviewed Nick Swisher on the field in Pandemonium. It was awesome. I was at the stadium in 03 when Konerko hit when Konerko hit the grand slam in game 2 of the World Series. I've spent a ton of time on the South Side.
Playing, man. Ever since, like I said, ever since I heard the news, I'm like, yeah, they're an awesome station, but big old but there, you know. Cubs never won a thing until they left their radio station.
Well, here's Mike. Here's another way to look at it. The Sox wanted to be here. WGN
I just don't want that jinx, you know. So let's just all put our real hearts into it and make it happen.
You got it, Mike. We appreciate you. Trust me, we are WGN and the White Sox are going to be great partners. We're not going to put out some old school Cubs curse on them.
You think the Cubs would have won like 10 World Series if they had been on a different radio station? Mike's probably dead on there.
There could be something going on.
In the 70s, they would have had at least one three-peat.
Maybe that, you know, Dave Kingman would not have just been a home run hitter on 720 WGN.
He would have been a five-tool player.
He would have been a five-tool player. Craig, welcome to 720 WGN. You're home for the Chicago White Sox. What's up, Craig?
So, Donald Trump is my president, and Harry Tynowitz is on WGN hosting a White Sox show.
Co-hosting.
I don't know what's going on with my world anymore, man.
Things change, Craig.
I just wanted to know, with all these free agents, what teams do you think are best positioned to kind of, I mean, at some point, these guys are going to have to come down on their asking prices. Do you think there are some teams that are kind of waiting in the weeds? It seems like the White Sox wouldn't be that, but.
No.
It's a great question, Craig. Hang on. Let's answer it. It's a great question.
Absolutely. You know, I think the Twins. I think the Twins are who went from last to playing in the wild card game last year. I think the Minnesota Twins are sitting on Chris Archer, who is one of the great strikeout pitchers in baseball. And the Twins are a team that nobody took seriously last year. And, of course, they're in the White Sox AL Central. I think Minnesota Twins could be making a move. The Orioles have to get pitching. They went after Andrew Cashner, but they're not done. They're going to get some more pitching. And, I mean, even the Astros, who won the World Series, went out and got Gerrit Cole. You know, former top pick in the draft with the Pirates out of UCLA.
I mean, I look at a team like Milwaukee, who's done a lot in the offseason.
Two of the best center fielders in baseball.
Right, and Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain, and you're sitting there with a rotation that is lacking, and the market's coming back to you, and you know that might not be the case going forward. So I would expect, I'm kind of surprised that hasn't happened already, that the Brewers haven't gotten aggressive with a guy like Arrieta, which makes sense on a lot of levels for them. So, I think it's teams that are, to me, it's small market teams who are close enough and realize that this is an opportunity where the market has come back and we should take advantage of it. Hey, let's get Darren Jackson on after the 4:30 news. Quick timeout. We'll get your news in 2 minutes, 720 WGN.
The message is the same. I think it's, even with the pitchers now, I know it's redundant. I know I'm repeating myself a lot, but we want to make sure that it is consistent, that it's the same, that we prepare every single day, that we play hard, that we are totally committed to playing the game the way the organization sees us playing the game.
White Sox games are better with a group. Group events are perfect for clients, employees, celebrating, or fundraising. Bring your group of 10 or more for a great experience with specially priced tickets. It's never too early to start playing 2018 with the Chicago White Sox. For more information, call 312-674-6330 or visit whitesox.com.
White Sox Weekly continuing. That's Harry Tynowitz. I'm Mark Carman. That was Rick Renteria, your White Sox skipper, coming out of the break. And this is DJ Darren Jackson, your radio home for White Sox baseball, right here alongside Ed Farmer, DJ doing the color. DJ, welcome to 720 WGN. Great to have you, sir.
Mark, Harry, it's great to be on board with you guys right now, let alone on WGN Radio this year. We're kind of excited about the whole marriage between the two.
So we're getting calls today, DJ. People are saying, look, man, when the Cubs were on WGN, they never won the World Series. We're worried that they're going to be the curse for the White Sox. Can you tell White Sox fans that it wasn't the radio station's fault, please?
Hey, you know what? I run that down the same line of we're not allowed to talk about a no-hitter going on because we're going to jinx it. It's got nothing to do with the radio station, folks, even though, again, we are excited we're on WGN. And you know what? In the window of time that we have, hopefully we'll be there a long time on the radio station with you guys, but at the same time, win a championship within that time frame. So long term, I hope this is a great relationship.
Yeah, I think it could grow into a very, very long-term relationship. DJ, always a pleasure. I've thrilled to have you guys here and to visit with you again. So for Sox fans, they saw it with the Astros. They saw it with the Cubs. This Rick Hahn rebuild is in full swing. It's looking awfully good. And most of the focus begins with your second baseman, Yoan Moncada. What have you seen from Moncada to make us think that this year he's going to be so much stronger for the Pale Hose?
You know, one of the things about Yoan is, first of all, obviously he's a five-tool guy. Everybody sees that and knows that. And, yeah, he struck out quite a bit last year, and there's a concern there. But I think that the things that they focused on with him were getting him to be a little more aggressive because he was kind of passive. And I think he's one of the rare guys, Harry, that you can say, we need you to be more aggressive, and he can apply it and be successful. You take somebody like somebody in the past, like Diane Vecchietti, who say, be aggressive, that's bad. No. Be aggressive is what he's going to do. Don't tell him to do the opposite of be passive. Okay? You don't tell guys that are one way to change their way. But Moncada's coachable. He can kind of go in any direction and probably succeed. So it'd be interesting. Because at the end, when he was more aggressive, he hit the ball with more authority, he drove the ball, he was able to produce some runs. So I can't wait to see if he's going to be able to balance it. Because in today's baseball world, you guys know, with all the sabermetrics and graphs, and you cannot really be predictable. You got to set a tone that you're a guy that's a first-pitch fastball hitter. Then you can't be a first-pitch fastball hitter. It's got to be a game of surprise at all times now.
Since you just touched on sabermetrics, DJ, I want to ask you about pace of play because that's a big topic this week. And Rob Manfred, baseball's commissioner, might just say, hey, guys, there's going to be a pitch clock. And yes, we're going to limit mound visits. And as a broadcaster sitting there, I'm sure you're all for it. But as a former player, you know, what would be your take if they're kind of trying to speed up the game and the natural flow has changed?
Let's do it as a broadcaster or as a player, as a fan, as a coach. I don't
right.
care. I hear coaches say, this is the way our game is played. And look, I used to stand out in center field as an outfielder and my pitcher's taking too long. I'm going, let's go! Throw the ball! Because it's driving us all crazy. We're out there ready to play the game. We're not out ready to kick our spikes together and check the flag and throw some grass up. No. Let's play. We all want to be active. And when the pitcher is slowing down the pace of play, trust me, there's nobody out there going, yeah, this is cool, that's standing behind him.
Right. All day. So what's the number one thing you would do then? If you were Commissioner Jackson, Commissioner DJ, what would be the one thing? Hey, we have to have this. Let's start there.
Well, the number one thing would definitely be that I eliminate as many visits. You know, the pace of play clock is great. But I think last year I did some calculations on how many times a catcher went out there, an infielder came in, because it's a slowdown game now for pitchers that are struggling. And I think you kind of eliminate that to the one visit, from the coach, the manager, or whatever, and then you got to make a change. You cannot send players there anymore. Look, teach some hand signals, do something. Yeah, you're pulling off your pitches, do this, but yell it from the dugout if it's a correction physically, if it's a mental thing. Well, then that's his problem. He's going to have to figure it out, or you're going to have to get him off the field.
Just like football, DJ, you hold up posters in the dugout, you can move this game along quicker. There's a guy who I think is sitting on a potentially very huge offensive season. That's your DH, Matt Davidson. What do you like about Matt's progression?
Well, you know what? To me, actually, Harry, it's more of a wait and see. I mean, he hit some home runs last year. I wasn't a big fan of the swing and miss. He had a lot of those. And I think for Matty, it's going to have to be, he's going to have to make more consistent contact. I'd like to see I'd like to see his batting average up to 250 at least. Get it to 250 to 260. It means the production goes up. The power's there. The guy's strong. You hit the ball in any direction. But I think you just got to have a higher rate of contact, and good things to happen for him. So I'm not 100% sure that, you know, necessarily he'll back up those power numbers that he had last year. I think he's going to have to go out and show he's got some patience, some discipline in the strike zone, and then he'll back up that. But we got to see that early on, that he sets the pace against opponents, that he's not going to swing at pitches and miss them.
Do you, if you were the skipper of this ball club, would you have him as the DH most games, or would you be moving that different guys into that slot?
I got no problem with rotating guys into the DH role. I think the important thing is to make sure you keep your bench as fresh as can be. I learned that at an early age watching a manager by the name of Jim Leland with the Pirates, where he always kept everybody off the bench fresh. And when I became a guy that was coming off of the bench in the early part of my career, I said, you know, I wouldn't mind playing for him, because that way I know I'm always going to stay fresh. I'm coming off the bench. The longer you set, the less you play, the less productive you're going to be. So I think you rotate those guys, get their at-bats. Make sure even if they're struggling, you get them out there, put them in back-to-back games if they have a bad game off of the bench. These are all things that keep your players balanced and confident that they can figure it out and will figure it out. The less you play them, the more likely it's going to get in their head and they're going to fail for a longer period of time.
White Sox Weekly talking to Darren Jackson, 162 games right here on 720 WGN. DJ, let's talk Tim Anderson and rough season for him last year, at least for the most part, I would say. I thought he got better as the year went on. But, you know, and a lot of stuff going on off the field. And a lot of positive comments coming from him as far as his focus for going into 2018. What are you expecting from Tim Anderson?
Well, I think he's going to get better this year. I think he's going to kind of put it all together from his previous 2 years in the big leagues. I think this is a year where you see him produce offensively. He minimizes mistakes from the past defensively. You know, he's an active guy. He's a little firm defensively. He's not Omar Vizquel with the soft hands. I think he'll get that down to where mechanically he's in the right position to make the right plays. He's got tremendous range. I think he just starts eliminating mistakes, and he has himself a tremendous all-around year, whether it be hitting, driving in runs, hitting for some power, stealing some bases, and the defensive mistakes are cut down, because he's at that stage now in the big league career with confidence, where I think he's going to start understanding that he doesn't have to hurry or rush things.
Do you think he looks at it like, hey, this is make or break for me? I mean, if you were in his spot, would you have that mentality?
No, not with the contract he signed, not at all.
Right, fair enough.
and especially when you've got a manager and a coaching staff that keeps telling you, man, you're fine, don't worry about it. When you have that repetitive statement made to you, all of a sudden you start saying, okay, I can do this. These guys believe in me. So do I. So I think for him, he's not going to sit there and think that there's a lot of pressure at all, especially with the White Sox, where, as everybody knows, there's a tendency to give guys a really exceptionally long chance to really prove they can play, rather than some organizations that say, you're not getting it done, you got to go right now. So they're not really looking over their shoulders.
Hey, DJ, Carmen and I were talking before about this camp in Bradenton with all these free agents and you know, how this year it's so bizarre that all these guys are still out there. I know the Sox kicked the tires on Manny Machado, but do you see the White Sox bringing in, whether it's Melky Cabrera or anybody else, do you see the Sox during this young rebuild bringing in a free agent?
Honestly, with Rick Hahn, nothing would surprise me. But I still wouldn't understand the use of it unless all of a sudden we decide this year we're going to win. That really would be Rick Renteria and Don Cooper pretty much saying, we can win this year. We can really compete because look how we're performing. Then I can see it happening. Other than that, I think they stick to the course and let these guys get their experience in the minor leagues, get their experience, the guys that are already there. And you don't mess with it too much. I know we go out and get somebody like Soria that's a veteran, been around, so we're kind of showing signs. We're not afraid to bring a temporary, you know, stopgap type player in to help them get over the hump now. But nothing surprises me, but I would assume see us stay the course and let these guys get their experience, these young players.
And I heard Soria say he doesn't want to use his old nickname anymore, the Mexicutioner.
No, I don't think that would be too PC. Let's just say
right,
that.
Right.
Leave that alone. Let's just call him the closer if he's in that role and he's getting it done.
You got it.
DJ, last one, Jose Abreu. I thought the glove was better last year, and I don't know. Can we get I don't know what the next level is here, but maybe if the White Sox are going to shock people, he's got to be right in the thick of it, does he not?
Yeah, I think when you talk about if they're really going to surprise people this year and beat some tough teams, especially in our division, what you're going to end up seeing is Jose be as consistent as he's always been, but also he's going to have some guys in front and in back of him to help him relax a little bit or alleviate the pressure he's always under to deliver in the clutch. If he can have that happen, his numbers will just go up offensively, defensively. He'll play awfully sound because he's given everything he has. I think it's a balance. You know, you can't just put it all on your shoulders. Abreu's been consistent since he's been here, but if you put the pieces around him to alleviate some of the pressure, he's just going to be that much better.
Darren Jackson, great to talk to you. Great to have you on 720 WGN, and we look forward to hearing the first spring training game next Friday. Appreciate you.
Guys, I appreciate being on with you. I can't wait to talk to you guys more regularly.
Absolutely.
I just want to be around Fermio for the positive vibes.
I'm going to hang out in the booth a lot, DJ. I hope that doesn't bother you. I'm sure Harry will be there, too.
It's all right. I've got the key to the door. I'll lock you guys out.
Thanks, so, Darren.
Already happened.
See you guys.
Take care. DJ Darren Jackson on White Sox Weekly. We got Don Cooper coming up. Look at that, Harry. We'll go from a little. We focused on the offensive side of the ball. We'll talk some pitching with Coop coming up in 2 minutes. 720 WGN. 720 WGN White Sox Weekly continuing to the top of the hour. Let's waste no time here. Mark Carmen, Harry Tynewitz bringing in the pitching coach, Don Cooper. Coop, welcome to WGN. Great to have you.
You know, it's great to hear that we hooked up with you guys. it's just, WGN, but quite a huge name, obviously, in Chicago and really now in Chicago and across the United States years ago with the covering of games. So I'm excited. Obviously, you guys want to talk some pitching or baseball or White Sox, so let's have at it.
Yeah.
We want to talk to Don Cooper. What was the highlight of your offseason, Coop?
Oh, gosh, the highlight of the offseason. Listen, I've come to like the offseason so much more. You know, the highlight was every day you get up, you wake up, and you can do what you choose to do with your family, you know, and be in your own home, your own bed. You know, it's just great being home. You're around all the people that love you. That was that, and you know, they pay you, so you know you're still getting paid. So you're getting paid to be home enjoying it. And now we're working. And we're working for our money out here in Glendale, Arizona, with spring training. But spring training is really just because you're enjoying the people that are around you in your home, in your house, in your neighborhood, whatever. You know, so that's it. But you know, now, like I said, now we're out here in spring training. We just finished day four. We've got a bunch of time left right here, but the first 4 days have gone great.
Coop, I've wanted to talk to you for a long time. I think I just want you in my life to motivate me, because every time I hear you, you just get the nose to the grindstone. You're ready to go day four. Let's do this. What's going on with Lucas Giolito here, Coop? Can he, if at the end of the year people were saying, you know what, Giolito, I think he actually was the White Sox number one starter. Would you think that's in the cards? Do you see that happening?
I don't like putting numbers on guys. 1, 2, 3, 4. So as far as I'm concerned, the only time numbers are important, who's going to pitch playoff game number 1, 2, and 3? You know, because after a while, you know, number one is your first guy that starts is not going to face the number one against their other team every time. You know, the schedule gets mixed up and all of those things. You follow what I'm saying?
Of course.
So the only real importance to who's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, let me tell you, whoever's out there that day is my number one. You know, that's the way I see it. He's our team's number one. He's the guy trying to, you know, having the main thing of helping us win a ball game. That's why he's the number one guy that day.
Of course, but you...
Lucas, let's face it. He pitched very well last month. He did it because he was mixing in all of his pitches for strikes. He was elevating fastballs above the zone late in the count once he's ahead, throwing his breaking stuff in the dirt. He did everything that a starter needs to do to be successful.
Plus, you got to love, Coop, that he had some struggles, and he went back, and he worked on mechanics, mental side, all of it, and he came out on top. I mean, he's got a long way to go here, but I think that's a great sign going forward that he can struggle and find his way out of it.
Oh, no, absolutely. You know, you're right with that for sure. And he's just starting. Heck, he's had 1 month in the big leagues. Right. But it was an exciting month, and we're looking forward to seeing if we can make another big step forward. And that's kind of way I'm wording it. And that would be the same thing for Lucas. It would be the same thing for Fulmer. Really the same thing for everybody. You know, if you're not trying to improve at your craft and get better, you know, what are you doing? The improvement in trying to get better stops when you retire.
Well, I saw Carson Fulmer doing some things late in the season last year that he hadn't done before. So there's really reason to believe that, you know, he could have figured some stuff out working with you. And maybe this could be a very strong season for Carson Fulmer.
Well, let's talk about Fulmer. All right. Fulmer came up 2 years ago and we got his feet wet as a reliever. He had a couple nice outings and he had a couple lemons that didn't work out for him. But people would. Then judging him that he couldn't get the job done in a very, very small sample size. Very, very unfair to do that to anybody. Last year, he had a start against Minnesota. Pitched his scoreless first inning. Didn't get out of the second.
Yep.
And here comes all of the, he can't do it, he can't do it. And then he whipped out three or four really good ones against some good clubs. You know, you got to have a little bit of patience and allow for some settle in time. For anybody, because the exception to the rule is the guy grabbing the brass ring and being successful from day one till day final. Those are that's the exception. It's more the norm where guys have some ups and downs. You know, they're finding themselves. You got to be patient, and if you are, you can get rewarded by that patience. But, you know, Carson has his. They all have big challenges ahead, but you know what? We're welcoming the challenge. We're looking forward to the challenge. We're embracing it. We're going to embrace the daily grind of getting better and preparing each day for whatever role they have, whether it's a starting pitcher or reliever. And we're trying to look for ways that we can get better, you know, and that's what we're doing, you know, and that's going to be with everybody from day one to day final.
White Sox pitching coach Don Cooper on White Sox Weekly. Coop, how are you feeling about pace of play here? What happens if they say you can't go out to the mound as much or your catcher can't go to the mound? Does that bother you or do you like it?
Well, you know, a lot of things with the pace of play bother me because, you know why? I got nowhere to go. I'm okay, to tell you the truth, the game being longer. I mean, I'm there. This is the truth. I'm coming there every day to win the freaking game. And if that takes 4 hours, I'm okay with it. You know, I like them quick, but I like them to be wins. I mean, I don't care. It's not like I'm in a rush to get home. That's me. So I like the game the way it is. I'm not a purist. I'm not into saying don't change certain things. But, you know, listen, if you want the game to go faster, here's what I say. Open the strike zone. Make the strike zone bigger. That'll be a real good start from my end.
I completely agree with that move. Let's swing the bat. Let's open up the zone. I'm with you, Coop.
Last one before we let you loose on the Arizona night. Who is your closer?
we right now, looking for guys that simply come in and get people out for us. We don't have one in our minds sitting here, who's this guy, closer this, closer that. We're looking for guys that can get people out from the left side and from the right side. And that's how we'll select our bullpen. And, you know, what I'll tell you, the answer I'll give you, watch the Chicago White Sox on TV and watch it, then we'll get in the closing situation. If it was the first game of the season, see who we get in.
Hey, well, what about listening on the radio? What about
listen on the radio, too? Absolutely. Listen on WGN Radio, because then you'll figure out, because... No, that's not something we're looking to talk about right now. Again, we're trying to get guys to just be quality relievers and get people out for us, and we'll go from there. But again, you'll find out if we're in a winning situation in the ninth inning, up by 3 runs, and we, no matter whoever we bring in, then you'll know who our closer is.
Checks in the mail, Coop. Listen on the radio. We appreciate it, and we're very, very excited to be working with you, Coop. Looking forward to a great season and a great partnership.
You know what? I think we're going to have a lot of fun.
We absolutely are. Coop, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much. Don Cooper,
Coop!
The White Sox pitching coach on White Sox Weekly, our first ever. as we wrap up our first
hour. Did you have fun?
I did.
Got some more Sox blood cells going there through the bloodstream?
It's flowing, baby.
By the way, Coop said that two lemons. The Sox have had two lemons, Bob Lemon, 21, and Chet Lemon, 44.
Great knowledge right there, Harry Tynowitz. News in 2 minutes, 720 WGN.
He looks, he gives to Jordan. Jordan to the circle, puts the shot in the air. Good! The game's over, and the Bulls have won. With a jump shot in the circle, and Chicago has knocked off the Cavs 101 to 100.
55 years young today, Michael Jeffrey Jordan, Harry Tynowitz.
Happy birthday to you. He was so great. He was so great, and it still bugs the hell out of me when someone says LeBron or Kobe, who's the greatest player.
Yeah, I want to shoot all those people, and just in the knee, not necessarily in the head. Just you know, there's a
maybe not the best week to yeah, put it like that.
But perhaps, yes, I should have. My bad.
It's anybody that saw Michael Jordan play knows what a spectacular player he was. He made everybody on the floor better. And the year after he left, Scottie Pippen was spectacular, but boy, Michael did it all. He worked on his jump shot. He became a defensive player of the year, Carm.
Yeah, it's 312-981-7200. It's rare that I would ask you for something, but just on Michael's 55th birthday, if we can just get a couple of contributions here, 312-981-7200. I just would like to remember like your favorite Michael moment. Could have been a game, could have been off the court, could have been
a commercial.
A commercial. It could be
I believe he did a couple commercials.
A zillion different things. Harry, give me what we just played there, of course, was 1989, Game 5 against the Cleveland Cavaliers in a series where no one gave him a chance to win. He blows, misses two free throws in Game 4. He splits a pair of free throws in the final minute. They lose up 2-1. It's tied at 2-2. They go to Cleveland. No one thinks they're going to win that game. And then down 1 with 6 seconds to go, he hits a ridiculous pull-up to put him up 1. Then Craig Hodges gets beat on a back door by Craig Elo, 199 Cleveland. And then Mike, with the entire season on the line, with 3 seconds to do it against an entire team, hangs in the air and bangs it down. 101-100, they advanced to play the New York Knicks in the Eastern Conference semis. Pitino and the press took them out in 6, and then they were up 2-1 against the Detroit Pistons after another game winner off the glass with Dennis Rodman guarding him. That, I think, was my favorite year in basketball history, Harry.
It was a fantastic year. I mean, it was so great. There's so many Michael memories. You can't go wrong. Everybody in the building, everybody on the planet knew Michael was getting the ball at the end of the game. And he still could not be stopped. Michael Jordan was so spectacular of a player, and he got better as a defender, as a shooter. He had a huge Father's Day game, but I remember an Easter Sunday in Detroit.
21-27, 59 points. Go ahead.
And Chuck Daly, you know, the Jordan Rule, Sam Smith's great book. And I'm sure wherever Sam is right now, he's, you know, lighting a birthday cake. Michael Jordan took down the Pistons almost single-handedly that day on an Easter Sunday. And give me the numbers again, Carm.
He was 21-27 at 59. And how many dunks did he have in that game, Harry? You want to take a guess?
He had one.
That's correct. He had one dunk coming in from the left side of the lane, and he hammered it home. Everything else was from the field.
You know, those NBA hardwood classics on TV that are on NBA Network, sometimes like I'll be, you know, I'll have like 2 minutes and I'll find one and I'll just sit there and I'll watch it. I'll just watch the damn thing. Or like on YouTube, you know, I'll be watching like the Jordan, I'll put in Jordan Easter game and I watch the whole Jordan Easter game and then I just go to the next game they take me to. Specific moments, how about when he had the 6 3-pointers against Portland in the first half and he just did the shrug?
Yep, was there with Papa Fred, game 1 of the 1992 NBA Finals, 35 in the first half. I believe he finished with 39 for the game. I mean, the game was over at halftime. He wanted to put it on Clyde Drexler because a lot of people were saying at the time that Drexler had more range. So then Mike comes out and he hits 6 threes in the first half. There was also, you know, I like to name when they moved him to point guard. and he got I think he had a triple-double in 10 of the first 11 games. Just, okay, Mike, hey, Doug Collins, Mike, we'd like you to play point guard. Let's see how you do. And he just, like, attacked being Magic Johnson for a little bit. No, okay, we'll move you back to where you belong.
And you know, he was so great in the playoffs. I mean, they never lost. They never lost a playoff series that Michael Jordan was in.
I'll give you another moment along those lines, playoff moment. This Detroit 1990, the final.
Right, and I should say from the point when they, in 91, when he took over and became a champion.
Right.
Obviously.
Right, once they won the NBA Finals.
Right.
Exactly. So, but before that, which I actually enjoyed that era more, the rise of the Bulls before they were, you know, national, Chicago Bulls, all of that, it was more of a, there was just the build of the whole thing was just, that was my favorite. So, but 1990, they're down 2-0 to Detroit. It's the third year in a row they're playing them in the playoffs, Harry. All right? And they're down 11 at the half. And they're going to go down 3-0, and they're never going to get past Detroit, and Jordan's never going to win a championship. And he comes out, I think he had 11 at the half. He comes out, he finishes with 47 in the game, and the Bulls have this, you know, frantic, ridiculous comeback. And after the game, Phil Jackson in the post game press was like, "Well, today we just proved that Jordan rules." And I was like, "That's right, Phil." And they, of course, forced the series to 7, and then Pippen got the migraine, and they lost. And then Jordan was on Channel 7 with Jim Rose at 10:30 that night on a sports final, just begging for help. And the great Jerry Krause went out and got him, Cliff Levingston, and Goo helped. Dennis Hopson, not so much, but they won it next year. All right, 312-981-7200. Looking for Michael memories.
We're celebrating Michael's birthday.
On Michael's 55th birthday. You give us a good memory, we'll give you Lou Malnati's. 312-981-7200. Tina, what do you got for a Michael Jordan memory? Go ahead.
My memory is back in 1984, his rookie year. He would go, his chauffeur would take him to his brother's bar on Milwaukee Avenue, about 4400 North Milwaukee. It was called Boppers. And Michael would be there just enjoying himself and us gazing at him while he shot pool.
Michael,
was just an awesome sight.
Michael Jordan would go to Boppers and play pool, and you were hanging out watching, Tina?
Yes, sir. It was amazing.
Was he friendly? Could you engage him in conversation?
Well, stupid me. I took my girlfriend's pictures. He would let us have pictures with him, and I took my girlfriend's picture because, really, I didn't even know until after the fact who the heck he was.
But you're calling in today in 2018 to celebrate that moment, and you didn't even know who he was, Tina. How cool is that?
Well, it's stupid of me now. You know, I wish I would have gotten his autograph, you know.
But this is...
I wasn't into sports. I was into my own sports with baseball and the Cubs.
Well, you know what? Michael transcended sports. And the fact that your first memory of Michael is not during a game, but, you know, being out after a game, being out in a bar, that's exactly what we're talking about. He's one of the few guys. Thank you for the call. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tina.
We look for guys like this in our lifetimes. Michael Jordan is like the first guy I can think of, maybe, who transcended race.
It's true. That's part of the commercial appeal for MJ. You did not see white, you did not see black.
No, you saw a Chicago Bulls uniform, and that was awesome.
He was just incredibly like off the court memory, like to share one along Tina. When they won the championship in 91, Harry.
Yes.
312-981-7200, by the way, if you want to share Michael memories. It's his 55th birthday. We'd love to hear from you. They win the championship. They fly back from L.A., winning it in 5 games. Should have swept them in and out game one. They almost went perfect in the playoffs that year. They were 15-2, lost 1 game to the Lakers, lost 1 game to the Sixers.
Right.
So he comes. They land at the airport. He used to live on Windy Hill, which was the name of my intramural team at the University of Iowa. He lived on Windy Hill in Highland Park, Illinois.
Yes. Shouldn't your team have been called the restraining orders?
That's not nice nor true. So we all went to Windy Hill. where he didn't have a gated 23 at that point. It was just a regular house on the street.
I've been in that driveway many times.
Right. And so we're all hanging out, and he flies into, in his white Porsche, he flies into the driveway. MJJJ, the license plate, Michael Jordan, Juanita Jordan, they were still married at that point. Juanita gets out, goes into the garage. Michael gets out of the car, looks at everybody, and there's like 50 bozos like myself out there. And he just looks at all of us, and we're just looking at him, and he extends his hand, and everybody goes up and shakes Michael's hand, and he's saying, thanks for coming, thanks for coming, thanks for coming, thanks for coming. Sure, Mike, I'll come over anytime, man. You want to throw the football around? I don't know, shoot some pool?
That's great. You know,
isn't that a nice moment?
We should effort JP. We should get JP on to tell the story about when Michael and his dad were playing downstairs.
I love that story. Let's get your opinion in here. 312-981-7200. Corey, what do you got for a Michael memory?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I remember I was a little bit younger. I was only 13 at the time, but the shot against Byron Scott against the Jazz. When he kind of just tapped him and said, get out of the way, and knocked it down. And then you see Stockton falling to the floor, and it's just, it was amazing. And then it was really Michael's goodbye, and that's why it always stuck with me, you know. He's the greatest ever, and he had a profound effect on my life from that moment, really.
Corey, how old are you?
33.
Yeah. Yeah, appreciate the call. It's awesome.
Not Byron Scott. Byron Scott was the Laker.
Right. No, he's...
You're
talking about
Brian Scott.
How am I even forgetting the Utah?
I'm preaching. No, it was a Scott, right?
Yeah, but Byron Scott was on the Lakers. He wore number 4 on those spectacular Laker teams. He and Magic and Coop were, and Norm Nixon also another great.
You're
Laker
talking about Byron Russell.
Russell.
I don't know how that took me a second to pull that. Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Corey. Appreciate you. First of all, like, the part about the Byron Russell final shot that Michael Jordan ever took in a Chicago Bulls uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Let's remember.
Bad pie.
Bad pie. Right.
Well, he had bad pizza, right?
No, that was the year before. That was game 5 in 97. What's the most thing that sticks out to me about that shot is, listen, they were down 3. He drives down, he takes the ball the length of the court, lays it in, they're down 1. Utah comes down, they throw it into Karl Malone. Jordan comes from behind, strips him, doesn't foul him, hacks at it, ball's loose on the floor. Somehow, some way, Michael always grabbed the loose ball. Those big hands and just overall skill, he just would always just, everybody be like, try to fumble and get it, he just whap it. And then he just walked down the court, set the whole thing up, pushed Byron Russell aside, final shot as a Bull, held the form. I had such mixed emotions when that went in, Harry, because you knew it was the end.
Right. And you got to understand, like, Pax hit the game winner, against Phoenix on Father's Day. There were guys on Michael. Everybody thought Michael was getting the ball. Steve Kerr won a game in the final seconds because everybody thought Michael was getting the ball. Now, Pax still had to nail the shot. Steve Kerr still had to nail the shot. But how do you guard the Bulls? How do you cover anybody else when Michael Jordan's on the floor?
And this the Pax shot, too, it went into Michael and then to Scott. BJ to Michael to Scotty to Horace.
Let's
underneath.
Stand up and act it out here and in the Allstate Showcase Studio.
And then out to Pax. All right, more Michael memories coming up in 2 minutes. 720 WGN. Michael memories. Harry, you got another one there, buddy?
You know, there's so many great ones. Do you remember Dikembe Mutombo?
Love Dikembe Mutombo.
And what would he always do when he would block a shot?
That would be the finger wag.
The finger wag. And I love Dikembe Mutombo, too. Michael Jordan one time was talking to Dikembe Mutombo at the free throw line, and for some reason, I don't know how, I wasn't there, I was watching, but he closed his eyes.
Hey, Mutombo.
He closed his eyes,
hey, Mutombo.
Taunted Dikembe, and made a free throw with his eyes closed.
Hey, Mutombo.
Try that sometime.
This one's for you. That's what he said.
So great.
To really appreciate Michael, you have to understand how brilliant, hey, Mutombo.
He would take trash talking to a new level, and that's why we gotta get JP on, because Walter Payton was the greatest competitor ever, and to have like Walter Payton and Michael Jordan downstairs in your house like playing ping pong, You know, pool. It's got to be unbelievable.
We got Sam Smith coming up at 6:35. I hope you don't mind.
Oh, I saw you texting.
I was texting away.
It's funny. You were texting Sam. I was texting Lou Mouse.
Hey, Mutombo. All right, quick timeout. 720 WGN. Get you into news in two.
All right. Need to score 2
points.
Here's
how I see it. Duck.
Yes.
You kick it into the girl bunny.
Yeah.
Down in the post. You dish it back out to the guy bunny.
Got
you
it.
Swing around the mic over here. You go to the hole and dominate.
We on defense.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa. I don't play defense.
A little Space Jam for you, Harry. There you go, buddy.
The guy was a movie star. The guy was a movie star. I'm surprised he didn't do more movies.
Michael Jordan, 55 today. What do you remember? The Space Jam thing, the coolest thing about that, Harry, was what?
That Bill Murray and Michael Jordan were both in it.
Well, it came after he came back from basketball, played 17 games. Bulls got eliminated by the Orlando Magic the Eastern Conference semis. People were wondering, was Mike going to get his powers back? He goes out, shoots the movie, builds a bubble out in L.A. so he could hoop every day. Reggie Miller, Juwan Howard, all those guys were out there hooping with him. Got his rhythm back, became Michael Jordan again, then came back to the Bulls, and they won 72 games in the NBA championship.
I believe that was Sunday afternoon, March 18th, that Michael came back.
That's correct. 3-1-2, not against who?
Against the Indiana Pacers.
And he shot?
Don't remember.
7 for 28, by the way. Nah. This is off the top of my head, just for the record here.
I like it.
Yeah.
He came back at Market Square. Scalpers standing everywhere.
Like it. We're going for your favorite Michael memories on his 55th birthday here. I'll tell another one in 2 minutes here. 312-981-7200.
Celebrate Michael Day.
That's right. Jeff, go ahead. Welcome to WGN. Celebrate the greatest athlete to ever play anything. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I have a couple quick ones. You know, valet parking for him and his wife is the Range Rover at Bob Chin's in high school and college. You know, driving around in my truck with my buddies after they won titles, listening to We Are the Champions. You know, traveling overseas, some people, I'm from Chicago, or following Michael Jordan. And the best memory I have is the food game. I convinced my mom to drive my brothers and I and put my buddies down to the United Center. I think we paid $10 a ticket. We watched a flu game at the United Center. I'm hugging random people there, and you know, they scored 45, whatever it was, and you know, so there's so many memories. Those are a couple that stand out to me.
38 points in the flu game, and that's, you know, I never did that, Jeff. I never went to the United Center to watch a road game, and I regret it.
Who do you think got to go on the floor and do the announcements?
Oh wow!
Oh yeah, Cocker's like, I'm not going down there. You go for me. I go, okay, great. Happy you go.
That's awesome. Jeff, appreciate you, man. Hey, wait, hold on a second here. You were a valet at Bob Chin's, and Mike would show up in the Range Rover and say, park my car, so you actually got to drive MJ's car?
I drove MJ's car. I drove when Juanita came by herself. I parked cars in Oak Brook. I valeted for Frank Thomas, Chelios, Jared Roenick.
I've heard Frank is the greatest tipper of any Chicago athlete ever. Where did MJ fit in on the mode of tipping the valets?
MJ is between Thomas and no tipping Pippen. That's what I'll say right now.
Okay, so you'll confirm that Frank Thomas is a great tipper story.
Frank Thomas is very cordial, very great tipper. He signed autographs.
See?
I've the Blackhawks are great tippers. Pippen, nothing. You know, he wanted to be right up front, no tip. And, I mean, he gave a couple bucks to everybody else, but it wasn't for parking up front like he should be. Jordan and Juanita. Juanita was always more generous when she was by herself, but Jordan was a little, he was okay.
What are we talking, 10, 25?
Come on, come on. He said that you phrased that perfectly, by the way. That was very well done, Jeff.
I want a 10, 25. No C notes here, Jeff?
To leave the car up front of Bob Chin's back in the late 90s, you had to leave the car at least $20 to leave it up front. Jordan will come. We wouldn't even ask. I would probably get 10 to 15 bucks.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, 10 and 10, 15.
We used to get to go to Boston because of Sam Adams every year with the White Sox, and the bartender said, I look forward to the White Sox coming all year because Frank Thomas is the best tipper in Major League Baseball.
Interesting. Very interesting. You know, Jordan, Michael memory, him being on Oprah with Charles Barkley, and Barkley called him out for not being a great tipper, and Jordan was so pissed that this was on Oprah, right?
Uh-huh.
And
what did Oprah do?
Oprah just let it go on because it was great television.
By the way, Barkley on Jimmy Kimmel this week, if you missed it, do yourself a favor. Charles Barkley, never funnier on TV than with Kimmel this week.
312-981-7200. Michael Memories on his 55th birthday. Dave, you worked with MJ in the Nike ads?
Yeah, I worked. I did the first McDonald's spot with him, Air Jordan leaving O'Hare Field. I did Nike spots with him. I did Gatorade spots with him. Yada, yada, yada.
That's fantastic. That's cool as hell.
I can give you two quick ones if you want.
Please.
If you might get a kick out of one you'll remember, which was a McDonald's spot. The other one was the poster spot where you see the graffiti wall in the background and Michael up over the top of the kids doing the dunk.
Yeah.
Then we shot up on Clybourne Avenue, and the wall was there. That building's gone, but the wall was a great wall. While we were shooting it, Michael was taking breaks, and he was leaning up against a chain-link fence, which was right next to the alley, which was in front of the hoop, and above that was the L-tracks. There was a little white dog. Kept looking up at Michael every time he leaned up against the fence. I tagged the photographer and said, check that. I said, get the releases. I said, fine. Release the dog, release the guy. And about 6 months later, I was in a now-defunct Dominick's store doing some grocery shopping. I looked, and here was the Wheaties box with the posters in it. And there was the one that I'd worked on with him with the graffiti wall. Says, I got to have this in my collection. Dropped it in the basket. It flipped over. Full page on the back of the Wheaties box was Michael leaning against the fence with a little white dog looking up at him. I was like, thank you.
I love that. Hey, you know what? You've told me that story on the air before, haven't you?
I may have.
Yes, you have. It's a great story.
Thank you.
What about the McDonald's?
I don't remember.
We did the first McDonald's spot like in 84. And we shot in the sanctuary up by Loyola University.
Uh-huh.
And Michael, we rigged a chin-up bar because we had to leave Air Jordan and I leaving O'Hare Field where you see his legs and all of a sudden he does a jump and his feet just kind of leave the frame. And we rigged a chin-up bar above and he jumped up, grabbed it. The whole move was like water. It was like fluid. Our jaws hit the deck, and we're like, Michael did it again. He did it five times, every single time. There was not the grab and the release and the pull. It was all fluid. And about 6 years later, we were sitting out at the Rosemont Horizon doing a spot for Gatorade.
Uh-huh.
And we're sitting in the motorhome with Michael. I said, Mike, I got to ask you a question, and yada, yada, yada. And he said, Dave, I'll tell you. He said, I didn't think I could do it. He said, surprised myself. I said, Michael, you expletive deleted. And I've never forgotten the man. I've, had lots of memories of him. First Gatorade spots when he got back after his dad had been interned.
Yeah.
And got that spot. And the people outside were pretty nasty toward him. They just wanted to get out, done with the shoot, and leave. And they wanted him to sign shoes and autographs. And he was still grieving for his dad.
Yeah.
And never forgot that one. I mean, there's a lot of stories in there.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate you. You had a lot of contact with Michael. That's awesome.
Yeah. Carm, if I were to ask you your favorite Michael commercial, what would you say?
I liked the old Chevy commercials, which had Chicago Stadium in it, Heartbeat of America, and, there were kids running into the stadium. They would like be shooting whatever was in their hands into garbage cans on the street. It's the rhythm on the road. It's the pulse on the street. City and town, magic sound. Ooh, the heartbeat of America. And Mike would be sitting there with the Corvette.
I would never have said that.
He. I like the old school stuff. I like 87, 88, that stuff.
The one where his mom said, Michael, the boys forgot their Gatorade, and he went up to the treehouse. He disguised, and he hands them the Gatorade. And the best, the Michael and Larry.
Michael and Larry was great. I like the Chevy Blazer one. Hey, Michael, is that really your car? And he shoots the jumper. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, it goes through. Yep. It's the younger I was, the more I feel like attached to those type of things. All right, quick timeout, 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Michael Jordan, 55 today. We're doing a proper tribute right here on 720 WGN, and I love it.
That music reminds me. You go ahead and do whatever you want, but I would advocate don't gamble more than you could afford to lose.
That's a very good piece of advice from you, Harry, one that you, I think, have learned personally, perhaps.
If this were Back to the Future, man.
All right, let me give you one, Michael. In the locker room, Carm at Columbia College, taking classes from Red Motlow.
You just mentioned a spectacular person.
Right. A legend in Chicago radio.
Yes.
No longer with us. And Red would teach broadcasting classes at Columbia. And I had graduated from Iowa and I was trying to get into the business. So if you went to Columbia, you could get an internship. And that's how I started my career. So Red...
So they're responsible.
Yes. You can blame Red and Columbia and all that. So Red would take students to Bulls games. And this was like the reason for me to sign up, period. Like, I didn't even know if I'd have a shot at doing anything in the business. Still wondering about that. And so he takes... You get to go to the game. So it was a preseason game against Vancouver. We're talking like 1997.
Big Country.
Big Country Bryant Reeves. And really like one of the few games that you could go to where there's not a lot of media.
Okay.
So after the game, Michael, you know, he would take guys and wait. He would always talk after every single game, and he would take, you know, one wave, two wave, three waves. And so we're sitting there at the very end, and there's like 15 of us, and Mike is just in a great mood, and he's talking to everybody, and everyone's laughing. He's telling stories, and I'm just standing there. And this is like the greatest thing that's ever happened.
Right, you know? Right. You know? Right.
Like literally the best thing that's ever happened. And he was on Oprah the day before, and there was a song that he did way back in the day with Horace and Scotty when they were young. They were dancing to the song How You Like Me Now. I don't know if you remember that tune.
Sure, I do.
So he's wearing his sunglasses, and he looks ridiculous, and he's dancing. And so I'm thinking that me and Mike are buddies. I've known him since, you know, I went to my first game in the stadium. A playoff game was 1984 against the Milwaukee Bucks. So I threw myself into the conversation. I said, "Hey, Michael, how about a little 'How You Like Me Now' dance, a la Oprah?" My heart's pounding. I got to say something. It's Mike. He looks at me, shakes his head, and says, "Don't jump in," and leaves.
Oh no!
The whole we were having this great conversation. He's having so much fun, and I tried to be funny.
Oh,
young Carm, and he just don't jump in. Shakes his head. Everyone laughs like you just did there, and then out the door he went. That was the end. Like,
oh my god!
I was like, oh god, that was my moment. We could, if I just kept my mouth shut. Who knows how long we would have stood there? Maybe at least another 2 minutes. But that happened.
Wow!
Don't jump in.
Wow!
Don't jump in.
That happened to you a lot with women.
It was. It did feel very familiar.
That's such a great story. I can't believe I've never heard that story before.
Don't jump in. Thanks, Mike. All right, Kurt, give me a favorite memory.
Mine is the most two famous words Michael ever said. I'm back.
That was it. That was
the greatness.
That was
again.
That was the facts. Michael, the facts. How about that? Michael sent a fax saying, "I'm back."
Thank you, Kurt. That was... Well,
is Kurt still there?
Kurt is still there.
Yeah,
Here. That's Lou Malz worthy.
Lou Malz worthy for an "I'm back"?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Kurt, hang on, man. Harry's hooking you up.
All right.
You got it.
Thanks.
Harry, you were around him, not around him. Give me radio Harry, young Michael something. No.
Okay, so my Michael Jordan memory is I was actually when I had a real job, I was working for my dad, and there was a guy that worked for my dad who loved college basketball like I loved college basketball, and you know, we couldn't believe the Bulls took Jordan. He was the third player taken. We both thought he should be number one. And so he goes, "You want to go in on season tickets?" I'm like, "Absolutely, let's go in on season tickets." So we bought season tickets for Michael's rookie year, and we had them. We split them with another guy. We had them, you know, forever. And they were great seats. They were awesome seats. So I got to go to like a third of the games in Michael's career, and I got to take so many different people to the games. It was really a thriller. And I, you know, 94 is when I first got on the radio, And I always like would gravitate towards the Judd Bushlers of the Bulls. Because there's a million people around Jordan. Nobody's talking to Judley. I went and made best friends with Judd. Judd would come on the old Harry and Speck show every Saturday night, no matter where he was.
Didn't he like come from the United Center to be in studio with you or something?
Oh, yeah, he did that. He would call us up from bars. He, you know, like one time Kerr was in the background laughing at him for going on the air with us.
That's awesome.
But the only time I met Michael Jordan once in my life, it was at Morton Steakhouse, and it was may he rest in peace, the heavyset African-American umpire who died.
Eric Gregg.
I had an idea that we should make friends with an umpire, and so I went out to dinner with Eric Gregg, and there's Michael. And Eric goes, you want to meet him? Come on, I'll take you over there and meet him. And that's when I met Michael Jordan, only time in my life I ever met him.
Well, Eric Gregg, good man. Hey, Kurt won that Lou Malnati's. What about that Lou Malnati's, Dan Long?
Well, Lou Malnati's is the home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza with over 40 Chicagoland locations. And you can order online at loumalnatis.com.
Isn't that amazing? Look at that.
They're everywhere, and it's great pizza. There's one in Evanston.
Hey, real fast, Jim, I know you've been patient. Give me a quick Michael memory.
Hi, I'm a chauffeur, and when I'm taking people downtown through traffic, I show them about North Avenue on the Kennedys. There's a Michael Jordan building. I said, Google it, and you'll see a picture of him, either for Big Beer for Others, Men's Warehouse, whichever one he was doing at the time. But he was like an ambassador to downtown. You knew you were close to downtown, Michael Jordan building.
I loved the Bigsby and Crothers. That was a great look. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate you. Little Chet Kopic on a post-game show. You go to Bigsby's, get a little 23-ounce steak.
Diet Coke.
And splash it down with a little fry. What's up, Melanie? Michael moment. Go ahead.
Yes. This is through my sister, though, but to this day, we'll never forget. She went to the tournament, the golf tournament that it is between the U.S. and Europe. I can't think of it right now. She told me the other day.
Ryder Cup.
The Ryder Cup, yes. And I think it was like took place around in somewhere in the Boston area. And she was in a bleacher section, and she's not the tallest thing, but she's a great golfer. And she said that Michael Jordan was all the way down in the front of the bleachers, and as tall as he was, she just thought it was an opportune time to, she whispered over to his area, she says, down in front. And she says,
that's aggressive.
Says, down in front, and Michael turns around with kind of a stern look on his face, like, who on earth is telling me to duck down? And my sister, he sees that it's my sister who said it, and everyone just started cracking up.
That's awesome. Melanie, appreciate you. We're up against the breaker. That's awesome.
Good thing Carm wasn't there to ask him to do a dance.
Don't jump in. 720 WGN. Quick time, I'll get you into news. This is
my kingdom. Now back to the beat.
720 WGN. 720 WGN, your new home for the Chicago White Sox. We got our White Sox weekly debut from 4 until 5 earlier today. Talked to Don Cooper, talked to Darren Jackson. That'll be available on the podcast. Harry Tynowitz with you and yours truly, Mark Carmen, till 7 o'clock tonight. Blackhawks hockey coming up. The Washington Capitals at the UC tonight.
Chance to listen to one of the game's greatest players ever.
Alex Ovechkin at the UC tonight. And tickets, by the way, very expensive. Just check the StubHub for a last-minute play for myself. And won't be going to the United Center tonight. They are an expensive city.
Well, he is the Great Eight.
Yeah, I mean, yes, and people love Saturday night games, right? So,
yeah.
And despite the Hawks struggling. So there's a little NBA breaking news. By the way, we're going to talk to Sam Smith from the NBA All-Star Game right after 6:30. Yeah. What do you got, Harry?
And, of course, Carm, basketball fans know that the NBA does things differently than the other sports. The Basketball Hall of Fame is for all of basketball. You know, it's not just like the NFL or the NBA. I'm sorry, the Major League Baseball, the NHL. It's for men, women, college. So the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame unveiled this afternoon their Hall of Fame class. Leading the nominees are Ray Allen, Jason Kidd, and Steve Nash. Gee, I wonder if he'll make it. And the Kurt Gowdy Award for Electronic Media is going to Doris Burke.
Wow.
who is the first female to regularly hold down the job of NBA color analyst. I think it's an awesome choice.
All of those people are extremely deserving. Who would you rather have, Nash or Kidd?
Oh, boy, Steve Nash.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, Jason Kidd was a great player, but Steve Nash.
Two-time MVP. Maybe, yeah. Maybe didn't deserve either of them, but he was. Better shooter.
Why didn't he deserve him? Because Michael?
Because LeBron was playing, and I can't. You're a great player, and the NBA, the MVP is never about who's the best player in the league. They have some, you know, it's about how many, if your team overachieved and that type of stuff. All right, and then Ray Allen's an absolute, you know, one of the greatest shooters in the history of the game, 100% belong. Doris Burke, she was in town this past week at the United Center, and just seeing her walk around, super friendly, very likable. I'm all Doris Burke, for the record.
One of my wife's favorite players and one of the guys she hated the most are both nominated. She loved Grant Hill, and she hated Chris Webber. They are both up, along with Chicago kid, Maurice Cheeks, and Lefty Driesell, the Maryland coach. He's on this list. Rudy Tomjanovich, women's players Katie Smith and Tina Thompson, referee Hugh Evans. Baylor's women's coach Kim Mularkey and Wayland Baptist University's women's team, which won 131 in a row in the 50s.
Of all the names you just put out, Mo Cheeks resonates the most with me. Chicagoan, and I love
DuSable High School,
and I love the 1983 Philadelphia 76ers.
They were great.
One of the best teams in NBA history.
Mo Cheeks' dad went down to where the Bulls were holding their draft party and begged the Bulls to draft Mo Cheeks, and they did not.
Would have been a pretty good fit.
Do you think?
Got Mo Cheeks. Mo Cheeks, Billy Cunningham, Dr. J,
right,
Andrew
right,
Toney,
right.
Mo Malone.
Oh, man, I love that team, too.
That was a great squad.
Bobby Jones.
Beat the Celtics. The Celtics yelling, beat L.A., beat L.A., beat L.A., and they went on to beat the Los Angeles.
Daryl Dawkins.
Really cool.
Chocolate Thunder.
No longer with us, Chocolate Thunder. Passed a lot of and Mo Malone.
Oh, I'm glad you reminded me. Lucy got back from Japan. She brought all her friends got these books and stuff, and she brought all these great things from Japan. She brought me mini Nestle's Crunch Bars, the Japanese version. So I brought one for you and one for Dan.
Welcome back, Lucy.
Yeah,
you miss her?
Oh, I miss her. Of course,
And now back. Wow, what a supportive parent.
It's great having at least one female in my house that likes.
Are you leaving are you going to get the Nestle Crunch right now? Harry's going to get the Nestle Crunch, which gives me time. Japanese National Crunch. Okay, my bad. Hey, favorite story of the week. Let's talk about it here. A University of Arizona cheerleader was ejected for heckling an Arizona State player. This happened Thursday night, Pac-12 game, Tempe. Arizona State guard Remy Martin was at the free throw line. It's the second half of the game. The cheerleader was a male cheerleader. His name was Randy McCall, and he gets up and he starts taunting Remy Martin, who he yelled at him, not today, Remy. And the official sees this male cheerleader screaming at Remy Martin and boots him out of the game. Get out of here, male cheerleader. And I don't know what about the story I love, but I love it. Like, that is so incredibly bizarre. If I'm the ref, I don't think I'm kicking out the cheerleader, but that being said, you can't scream at an opposing player as the male cheerleader. It's just a bad look. Male cheerleader, stay in your male cheerleader zone, and I would never be a male cheerleader. No disrespect to male cheerleaders. I just personally don't have the confidence to stand up there, wear that uniform, do that gig.
Okay, well, there's two stories here. One is, should the ref throw out the male cheerleader for doing that? And the other is, why wouldn't you be a male cheerleader?
Well, and I think that is maybe the most uncomfortable thing that I could think of being, a male cheerleader.
Boy, do I have a different perspective on that than you.
Were you ever a male cheerleader?
Well, I didn't have the physique to do it, but I can, let me give you a couple, and please join in if you were a male cheerleader or you knew anybody who was.
312-981-7200, male cheerleader.
So oftentimes the male cheerleaders in college are high school sports stars that aren't good enough to play at the collegiate level. And their way to stay around sports is to be a male cheerleader. Think about that. You have been a valued player for your high school team. You played whatever sport it was, basketball or football or, you know, any of the other sports. And you, because I had a buddy from New Trier, a guy, Gibby Kirshner, who was very good in talented high school player who became a male cheerleader.
The Gibber?
Yes. And I knew another guy who I made friends with at KU who was a male cheerleader. And he said, Harry, the hottest girls in college are on the basketball cheerleading squad. Wouldn't you say? Think about it. KU, basketball tradition. How?
I mean, you do get a very close proximity to a lot of incredibly good looking girls.
He said those girls are with those guys for like the entire year. And there's a lot of lifting that goes on. There's a lot of closeness.
But aren't you immediately in the friend zone as a male cheerleader?
Well, I suppose with that attitude.
I think you're out. I would think they're way more likely to be attracted to the athletes, not the male cheerleader.
Well, I'm not saying that they weren't more attracted to the male athlete, but I'm just saying that male cheerleaders get a chance, get an opportunity to get close to some of these cheerleaders that they wouldn't get if they were just, you know, the guy in the stands going, oh, look at that male cheerleader. I wouldn't want to be him.
I also do want to just own that they have more confidence to do that gig than I do. Yeah. I could not. I would not have the confidence to walk out there and do it. No way. I'm not strong enough either.
I totally get it. I get it. You know, you want to run out on the football field on Saturday. You want to be on the basketball court when the game starts. You can't do it as a player at the collegiate level, but you could do it as a male cheerleader. So
Remy McCall stared down the cheerleader just before the cheerleader said, "Not today, Remy." Another source told ESPN that McCall then walked over to the scores table and said, "This guy needs to get out of here." Remy Martin.
Remy Martin?
Remy McCall.
Remy Martin is a cognac, my man.
Remy McCall, my bad.
Yeah.
He went to the scorer's table. He was yelling. He was using the megaphone to call out people by name, which is not acceptable, McCall said, according to the Arizona Republic. And he was asked to please stop, and he chose not to. And according to Rule 10, Article 8 of the official referee handbook, Harry, cheerleaders, quote, shall not commit an unsportsmanlike act, such as using musical instruments, amplified music, artificial noisemakers while the game is in progress, except timeouts and intermission. So you can take your megaphone, you could say, "Let's go, Wildcats," if it's Arizona, but you can't do it while the game's going on.
Okay, so I guess that makes sense. That's fair. But, I mean,
Randy McCall booted.
Look what these NBA mascots do. I mean, they hold up, posters of women and cheerleaders. They bug the players. They pretend to listen to the huddle on the sidelines.
It isn't Remy Martin, is the Arizona State guard, for the record. Remy Martin, he's a freshman.
It's also for you youngsters out there, as you go to nicer and nicer restaurants with a date, a very good thing to order is a Remy Martin straight up. But two things: do not drink and drive, and number two, don't drink more than you should.
There's some interesting text coming in here. Great way to pick up women. Wake up, Carm, from the 847.
See, there you go. Now you're talking.
College hormones override the friend status. 219, Mark and Harry, George W. Bush was a male cheerleader in college. Was he? Is that true? Can I get a fact check on that?
At Yale?
George W. Bush went male cheerleader? Is that true?
Well, you know, it makes sense because he was a very good high school athlete. So maybe he wasn't good enough to play in college, and that's his way of sticking around athletics. I'm telling you, Carm, think about it. Carm, you had friends that played sports in high school, right?
Yes.
Okay, so they loved it. It was very, very much a key part of their game, of their life, and they didn't get to participate in college because, you know, they had to focus more on academics, or they simply weren't as talented as the other kids in college. So this is their way to stay in sports.
There are all sorts of pictures of George Bush doing cheers at Yale.
There you have it.
So are you saying that I missed it? I should have been a male cheerleader, Harry?
I don't know.
I could have gotten more in shape, would have had a more successful career at the University of Iowa?
No, the two points I made is it's a way to stay around, to feel involved. And this is what I was told by the male cheerleaders.
I tried to work in sports information. That was my look, which was not very exciting.
That's okay. Well, you're working towards your career. But the two things I was told by male cheerleaders were that it's a great way to feel like you're still part of the team. You know, you're part of the athletic event. You're helping make a difference. You're getting the crowd going, and also the babes that you have. You're just like constantly around these women, rehearsing. And as a result, you know, walls come tumbling down.
312-981-7200. Deep topic here. Carm, stick with the chess club. More hot women for the rest of us.
That's funny because you said you're at a chess club.
773, wrong. The jocks in high school are not doing as good as the guys in plays and drama and acting class. That's from Larry.
Well, I can tell you I was in all those college plays and not like I was getting a lot of tail.
Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Well said, Harry. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. and stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on WGN TV. Why don't you just say it? I wasn't connecting with women the way I preferred to. It wasn't about getting right. Whatever
when,
you just said.
When you became a stand-up? Oh, ho, ho.
Okay. Go, Harry. 720 WGN. See, I should have been, I guess, a cheerleader at the University of Iowa.
Makes me think of Will Ferrell, Saturday Night Live. The Will Ferrell cheerleader skit, very funny. Of course, find something Will Ferrell did that wasn't funny. Good luck.
Well, Harry, I mean, we're getting a lot of support here, by the way, for my nephew was a cheerleader, then became the Redbird at ISU.
Mm-hmm. Strong school, Illinois State. That's where Steppenwolf Theater started.
Fear the Bird. Harry Tynowitz with huge support for male cheerleaders. If you're just joining the show, a male cheerleader at Arizona was kicked out this week when he was screaming at an Arizona State player. And now we're just talking about whether or not you should be a male cheerleader because that's a great look in life. Elliot, is this true? You are or were a male cheerleader?
I was big powerhouse MVC school, Drake University.
Great school there in Des Moines.
There you go. So, yeah, I was, and it was funny because I wasn't going to do it. A buddy of mine was on the squad. He's like, you'd be great. I said, not a chance. Never going to happen. Long story short, I tried out, and I made it. You know, and this was the days before the internet, and so I didn't even know I made it until a couple days later. So I made the squad. I got to tell you, the first thing that made it great is we went down to this camp called the UCA camp. It was down in Nashville, Tennessee, or down in Memphis, at Memphis State University. Carm, every girl that you ever dreamed about was there and partying and having fun. And it was the best week of my life. And so it's unbelievable.
Hold on. You got to stop there, Ellie. Just let that land. It was the best week of my life. Let us all be jealous of you. And let me add, hold on. Are you talking like Olympic Village? What are we talking here? Yes.
That's a great analogy. Let's just say you're walking through the halls of the dorm, and all of a sudden there's a girl that wants to trade T-shirts with you, and you got to trade.
And you got no choice at that point, right, Elliot?
You got no choice. You got to, you know, you got to do her the solid. Now, the friend zone comment is true if it's your partner, typically. At least it was in my case. But the other girls on the squad are fair game. And, you know, to your point, the hormones are raging, and, you know, it just ends up being a good time.
So hold on a second. So who you get paired up with, you don't want to be paired with the one or one of the ones that you're extremely interested in. So you actually want who you're not interested in. That's who you want for your partner.
That's my philosophy. Now, I should have done other ways, but that was definitely my philosophy. Because, you know, if it's a bad day or a bad night, and then you got to go cheer with them, it's a rough couple hours.
Right. Hey, right.
God bless you, Elliot. You see things so clearly.
Elliot.
Well, now, the funny thing is, now this is the crazy part. I dated a girl who played on the varsity basketball team. So I actually cheered for her. And I was almost kicked out of an NCAA tournament game because of just what that guy at ASU did. I was yelling and screaming. And listen, I'm a sports fan, so I've got front row seats and a megaphone. So I'm yelling at the refs and giving them the business. And yeah, it was not good.
Do you understand? Elliot. Do you know how much confidence you have in life that you dated a women's basketball player as a male cheerleader? That takes
and,
a lot.
Yeah, and he was years ahead. He was years ahead of the curve.
Yeah,
because you know,
yeah, it was. Yeah, when I told that story, my father went, "Wait a minute, what's going on?"
Elliot, you had
basketball play. Well, I said I'm dating a basketball player and my cheerleader. My dad says, "Do you have something to tell me?"
Elliot, you had two turntables and a megaphone.
I tell you, it was fun. It was a great time, you know. And you know, small school, so I didn't have to do any tumbling. I didn't know how to do any of that. I was terrible, but I was in great shape. I had a lot of fun.
you know, got to travel. I mean, you know, I was at NCAA games and, you know, or one NCAA game, I should say. We only went to the NIT. But, you know, I got to have a lot of fun. You know, got to get out of class, got to, you know, travel with the team. And, you know, it ended up being a great time.
Did you get taunted?
A lot. Oh, yeah.
Who cares? He just told you what he got, dude. Who cares he got taunted? He was a genius.
I want the full picture. I just want to know what the taunt sounded like, too.
My buddies would sit in the stands, and as I was cheering with my megaphone up, the game was to see if they could throw the ice from their pop into my megaphone.
That's awesome.
There was constant cleanup on the court for, you know, ice cubes flying over. And, yeah, there was a lot of taunting, but... You know, you put up with it as you could, and you know, the taunting was what you would expect.
Elliot,
you know,
I don't want to weird you out, but when I go to bed tonight, I'm going to be thinking of this phone call. Congratulations.
Thanks, man.
Good job.
You used to hang out at the Hat Dance days, so it's good to hear you back in the air.
Oh, thank you very much. Where did I used to hang out?
The Hat Dance.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
We did a couple nights at Hat Dance way back in the day.
Oh, yeah. I remember Hat Dance. That was Steve Dahl's place, right?
That's right.
Thanks, Elliot. Appreciate you.
Thanks.
There you go, Elliot, the male cheerleader at Drake.
I'm telling you.
That's amazing.
Yeah, Drake, of course, the Drake Relays in a wonderful pharmaceutical school.
You have to trade shirts. That's the way it went. 720 WGN. 639, 720 WGN. Mark Harmon, Harry Tynowitz with you till 7. Blackhawks hockey coming up. The Washington Capitals at the UC. Chris Bowden with your pregame. John and Troy on the call tonight. Sam Smith is out at the NBA All-Star Game because he is Mr. L.A. The guy's just walking the streets, living that L.A. lifestyle. And of course, he's got a book out, Hard Labor, The Battle That Birthed the Billion-Dollar NBA. And Sam, thanks for taking time. Are you, you've seen the All-Star Game kind of morph from a long time ago when it was super competitive to what it is now today with the skills competition and everything. Do you enjoy the weekend the way it's set up right now, Sam Smith? What would you say?
Well, I certainly enjoy it in Los Angeles, I'll tell you, tell you that. I've probably gotten numb to it. They don't give you any trophy for it, but I think this is my, like, 31st or 32nd in a row.
Wow.
And I think I've worn out everybody else has given up. So, but, you know, you sort of have to understand the... Or I do, since I'm here, whatever, watch. It's really an NBA trade show is what it's become. And it's, you know, the games and the contests are just sort of, you know, like timeout distractions, like at a game. You know, when you're at a NBA game and, you know, when there's a timeout or halftime, there's like jugglers and dancers and all that sort of stuff to sort of distract you. And that's kind of what the game is for all the other business they're doing here. So, you know, I sort of understand, you know, the concept of what it's become. In the 80s, it was a game. And that was pretty much all I had. And sort of began to morph into that. But, you know, and especially when you come to places like L.A., you know, it becomes a lot of celebrity stuff. Vegas, they had a few years ago, was a lot of that stuff. And last year, New Orleans was a lot of drunk stuff. So it depends on the theme of the community.
Well, 31 years in a row, Sam, that's impressive. They should give you a coin or something. of all the things that happened prior to the game, you know, with the slam dunk competition, the obstacle course, the world, you know, game against America last night, do you have a favorite event?
No.
You hate it all.
I'd like to have an answer for one of those things, but not really. There were events over time that were sort of entertaining. I mean, unfortunately, you know, I'm an old timer, so I actually liked it when the game was competitive. You know, I like baseball, you know, when it was a more competitive all-star game as well. You know, when there was an interleague play, I know we're going back far and different things, and the all-star game was a point of pride for the community. And, you know, Carm mentioned about, you know, Michael and 55th birthday, partially why, you know, he asked me to come on. And that sort of, you know, wrote some about that as well, double nickel and all that. But, you know, when they talk about in the current era and, you know, Kobe and LeBron, and these are all great players, no question about it, generational players. What I liked was Michael
going into three-point contests. Not that he did badly, which he did, but horrible, but that he was willing to take the challenge against anybody and not worried about being embarrassed and not worried about picked last or whatever, finishing last. And the great dunk contests with, you know, Dominique, where you had the guys who were recognized as the two best at what they did, and then they went out at the show at the showcase. That's been sort of a disappointment about what the All-Stars become, because the shooting contests and the maybe a little bit to the shooting contest, more so than the dunk, but you don't get the guys that people would most like to see compete. Like if you're drawing up your video game and you compete guys, you usually don't pick those guys for these things. Now it's a little more in the shooting contest, which is fun. If I had to make a choice, I think that's probably the most entertaining, because that's the closest to an actual competition that they get these days. The game is not, and the rookie game is not, and the dunk's really not. That's probably the one. I think, the skills thing will be interesting with marketing, and it's coming up in a few minutes. Because those guys, will sort of go through a training drill, and I'm anxious to see if that Andre Drummond, who they do the Hackett Drummond thing, if they make him make a three, we could be here until Monday.
Sam Smith, Bulls.com. I'm looking at the MJ and 55 points scored in time alive. Sam, you just mentioned that we did want to call you because, of course, you wrote the Jordan Rules and you covered the Bulls and you covered Michael, and we've talked to you a zillion times. But if you could just please tell us one Michael story on his 55th birthday that we haven't heard or you haven't told a lot, that's I would just like to sit back in the chair and listen to you, please.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like one or, but I was sort of thinking about that with the double nickel, which is a famous game when it came back in 95. And, I was watching some of Tiger Woods today, and obviously he went through some different stuff with back surges and all. But every one of these guys, when they came back, Tiger or Muhammad Ali, and people want them because of who they are to duplicate what they were. And when Michael came back in 95, he wasn't physically anywhere near where he was in the late 80s and into the first three championships. But sort of the force of his will and competitive nature enabled him, really, he didn't do anything better than anybody, any of the top players in the NBA, but he was the best player in the league those years. And that's why he endures to me, more than any of these other guys that will, and not that they're diminished players, Magic or Bird or whatever, Oscar going back, Wilt, Russell, LeBron going forward. Not because of just the shoes and the kids watch the videos and the clothes and all, but he took on every challenge, and like I mentioned, the dunk and the 3-point contest, and sort of. What we wanted guys to do in competitive sports, every TV game was a big game. Every game against the Pistons was a big game, and he'd acknowledge it. He never said it was just one of 82. These things all matter to him, even though they, sports and all that sort of stuff. And that's the thing to me that why he can't reach his level as much as they put up statistics or titles and count numbers toward him, because he transcended just the numbers about the game and that competitive desire and level and commitment and drive and fervor of his. We just haven't seen that from anybody come along. The market's different. They're all kind of brands now, even though he invented brand, but he never, obviously with all the success at Nike, but he distanced that, from his basketball. And that game was a great example. So he comes back. He's not in shape. He's trying to play baseball that season, and the strike comes up. The lockout is still going on from the end of the 94 series and cost the Sox the World Series that year, as Harry knows.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the Sox have told him he's going to get a September call-up if he continues. And he was progressing, and he would have deserved it. He really was coming on. And it would have been justified. And that's really what he wanted to show all these doubters. Classic Michael. I will be in the majors, and I will earn it there. And so, but then he's sort of, each side's kind of tugging on him. And, he doesn't want to get in the middle of it, and he leaves. And so he's sitting around, and he's not in any shape. And so he comes back, and the big build up in Indiana, and he shoots 7 for 28. And, you know, they lose that game. And he has one good game in Atlanta. He has a good game, and he makes a game winner at the end. But he had like a 7 for 23, loses at home to Orlando. So they're 2-2. And now they're going into, you know, Madison Square Garden and New York and the build-up for it. And he goes in and gets 55, and, you know, and throws the pass to Bill Winnington at the end, wins, you know, my supporting cast thing. And so every element is right there. You know, the biggest stage, the biggest demands, and, you know, he rises to it. And guys, you just don't see that. You just don't see that happen very much. And that, you know, to me, that was really what was special about that game. Not just that he went in there, but where he was, you know, in his level of play and his state of mind, you know, still half in baseball, half in basketball, the national excitement about it. I remember Clinton talking about it at his press conference about, you know, hey, you think Michael will come back? I mean, it was extraordinary stuff. You know, Tom Brokaw coming in to do the news from the Berto Center. It was crazy stuff was going on. And then he just, you know, goes to New York and just puts an all-time game on a great Knicks team. That was a team that was in the finals the year before. You know, they were 10 games ahead of the Bulls or something that year.
Yeah.
At the time. So it was just great stuff.
Well, of course, Clinton would mention it because at that point, Michael was one of the only people in America scoring more than Clinton. Sam, the All-Star game before Michael's All-Star game, the first one he was in, Isaiah froze him out.
Well, that's a matter of debate, actually, because I know that's a common story. I mean, it's better legend than reality, because the participants in it allegedly were Isaiah. It was the 85 All-Star game, his first one. Isaiah, George Gervin, who next year ends up going to play with the Bulls.
Right.
And Magic. And it's hard to freeze a guy out when you're on the other team, for one thing. And, you know, he did get 9 shots. I mean, I think he had the third or fourth most shots on the team. What happened was, the truth of it is, it's not as good a story, but the guy who was like a kind of a entourage fixer kind of guy was in the airport on the way back to Detroit and was sort of bragging about, you know, Jordan had a bad game and we shut him out. And they really didn't. I mean, but it was such a good story. And it was typical Michael, because the first game after the All-Star break was Detroit.
49.
It was a way for him to build up another one of these, you know, episodes where, you know, I'm going to get my revenge. And, you know, Isaiah was sort of flat-footed about it. You know, it was like, what are you talking about? There was no freeze out. But, you know, it became such a good – I remember Mike Royko once saying to me when something about a – when he came over to the Tribune in the 80s and after Murdoch took over the Sun-Times, and he'd written something, and so I wasn't close with him, but I was standing by the elevator, and I said something about one of his columns. I said, I don't think that was the case. And he said, hey, kid, don't ever let the facts screw up a good
story. Sam Smith.
I'm not going to let the facts screw up that good story, huh?
That's awesome. SamSmithBulls.com. Sam, we got Blackhawks hockey coming up here. I just want to make sure that your book, Hard Labor, is awesome. I'm halfway through it. Really great stuff on Wilt Chamberlain and how, you know, guys were fighting. Well, Oscar Robertson's like the hero of the whole book as far as fighting for players and getting what they deserved. And these guys were all, you signed with one team. There was no movement. Hey, we're going to pay you. Yeah, we're going to cut your pay from $15,000 to $10,000 this year. I forget. Was that Don Nelson, which you wrote about that? I forget.
Yeah, it was just an amazing story. I had a great session with the Legends Players Association. I spoke with him this morning about that history. And it's just, it really is a great story. I can't say it's a great book because it's mine. It is. It's really a great story, that 60s and 70s. And, I hope the young players in this era can take a look at it and realize what those players did and how much they went through. You know, 21 preseason games in 22 days. Then they start the season, you know, with back-to-back-to-backs. So it was some crazy era.
Next time we talk to you, Sam, we'll actually talk about the current Bulls team.
Glad to do it anytime. They're on the way, huh?
Yeah. Well,
yes, they are. Right direction.
Embrace the tank the rest of the way, and then playoffs next year. That's the plan.
You'll see me in the crowd holding up that Go Bulls sign behind Market.
All right. Thanks, Sam. Appreciate you.
Guys, see ya.
Thanks, Sam. Awesome.
SamSmithBulls.com. Let's get you ready for Blackhawks Hockey, 720 WGN. Charles Barkley on Jimmy Kimmel talking about the wacky tobacco.
You're not a pot smoker.
I've smoked pot 5 times in my life at the most, and all they wanted me to made me do was want to eat potato chips. I didn't get, like, I got friends who love it. I'll admit that.
Uh-huh.
It didn't take me no place.
Right.
It didn't make me feel this a type of way. I just wanted potato chips. that's it.
Potato chips, Harry, confirm?
I've heard.
Nice, solid choice.
I've heard that's what it does.
There we got more Barkley for you, but we're getting you ready for Blackhawks hockey, which is coming up in 3 minutes.
Hopefully the Blackhawks will get back on track. I don't remember the last time the Hawks won a game at home. It's been like over 10 years.
Tonight is the night, baby. It's coming right up for you. Thanks to Sam Smith for jumping on. Thanks to Darren Jackson. Thank you to Don Cooper.
And Dan Long.
Executive
producer.
Thanks for listening, calling, texting. We appreciate it. To the beat next week. And again, welcome to the Chicago White Sox to 720 WGN. Blackhawks hockey coming right up.